Okay, well, it's July 13th, and it's Monday, and that means it's study night. And we've been studying the topic that God exalts the humble. And our main verse for this is Luke 14:11, which everyone probably has memorized by now. It says, "For whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." And we looked at a couple of examples of this last week, notably Jesus Christ, who humbled himself in obedience to God as he ministered upon the earth, always doing the will of God, always speaking the words that God gave him to speak, and he was obedient unto death, even the gruesome death of the cross. And because of his complete obedience, God not only raised him up, but highly exalted him above everybody and everything in the heavenly realm at his own right hand, and that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father, and that we also are exalted because we humbled ourselves to confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, and God has raised us up and seated us in the heavenlies together with him. And we'll be further exalted after the gathering together. When he comes as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, we are going to be with him. We're going to appear with him in glory. So, a little bit of humbling, a lot of exalting that follows. And we also looked at Moses and how Moses humbled himself to identify himself with the Hebrew slaves instead of the royal family in Egypt. He humbled himself to believe God and obey him, follow all of his instructions. And even though in the beginning he was demeaned, you might say he was put down for speaking up for this God that nobody in Egypt knew about. His own people turned against him after Pharaoh decided to increase their workload instead of setting them free initially. But God kept working with Moses, and as time went by and Moses kept doing whatever God told him, he became great in the eyes of the Egyptians and of the people, and is still great in many people's eyes today as they read about him in the Bible. Plus, he's going to be getting up from the dead along with everybody else at the last day, and he will be greatly honored, I'm sure, for his obedience to God. So tonight I want to look at Moses' right-hand man, Joshua. Go to Joshua chapter 1, please. Now, we saw that Moses was the meekest man on the face of all the earth in his time, and Joshua was his minister. He put himself under Moses. So he was also a very, very meek man. And he did whatever Moses told him to do. And then when Moses died or fell asleep, God had some words with Joshua. And we're going to read those words in chapter 1. Verse 1 says, "Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord." That title of the servant of the Lord, that's a title of honor. You might think of servants as second class compared to sons, but Moses was precious to God. He was very valuable to God, and a man that would obey him, I mean, your sons don't always do that, right? But Moses was one who obeyed God. He loved God, and he did whatever God told him. So he was greatly missed. So after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel." God had promised this land 400-some years ago to Abraham and then to Isaac and to Jacob. It was important that the people enter that land because it would mean God fulfilling his promises to these people that he had relationships with. Verse 3 says, "Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses." He always keeps his word. "From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage. That's a command. That's something that Joshua would have to take those words and remember them and be strong and be of a good courage. For unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. And again, if someone swears, they cannot go back. They have to do what they have promised to do if they've sworn to it. And if God says anything at all, he has to do it. You know, only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. So he's telling him, look, Joshua, you know, there's things that I will be telling you personally to do. You need to do what I have told everybody to do, okay? You can't obey only the words that I speak to you by way of the Spirit that's upon you. You must obey everything that I have said for all Israel to do by the hand of Moses. You're one of the people of Israel. You have to obey the law yourself. It is vitally important that you do that and that you don't skimp on it. You don't leave anything out. You don't do anything you're not supposed to do, and you don't fail to do anything that you are supposed to do, okay? Your prosperity hinges on this. And prosperity does not just mean to make more money, okay? Some people think prosperity means bigger bank account. To prosper means to move forward, okay? Now, this word prosper has to be prudent, to be wise, to have success. But most of the words that are translated prosper mean to move forward, to make progress in a forward direction as opposed to going backwards, okay? It's not always to increase your wealth, but it's to go forward on the thing that you are told to do, you know, to prosper according to what God tells you. So as you obey the word of God and carry it out, you are prospering. You are moving forward, okay? This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth. Now, that's a funny translation. It sounds like you're not supposed to speak it. But it means you're not supposed to stop speaking it. You're supposed to always be speaking it so that it never doesn't come out of your mouth. So this book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth. It shall always be on your lips. But thou shalt meditate therein day and night. To meditate is to speak to yourself constantly, day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous. And then thou shalt have good success. I believe this word prosperous is, yeah, to advance, to progress, to succeed, okay? Again, it's to move forward. And you shall have good success. So that prosperity and that success hinges on him obeying the law, doing everything that God had already commanded and had written down on paper. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. It's the third time he told him that. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. That would be to lose courage, where you want to quit. For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. So this is what God told him. Now the next thing Joshua does is that he commands the officers of the people. So he takes immediate action on what God told him regarding crossing over the Jordan. So Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the host, and command the people, saying, prepare you victuals, for within 3 days you shall pass over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God giveth you to possess it. And he spoke to the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh. These are the ones that, after they had won some battles on the east side of the Jordan River, they asked Moses if they could settle in that land. So there's 2.5 tribes out of the 12 that asked if they could have their territory on the east side of the Jordan River. And Moses said, okay, after consulting with God. But he said, you men of these 2.5 tribes, you will need to go over the Jordan River with the other tribes and fight along with them until all the land has been won for Israel. Then you will be allowed to return back to your wives and children on the east side of the river. Okay? So that's why it says, to the Reubenites and to the Gadites and to the half-tribe of Manasseh spake Joshua, saying, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God hath given you rest and hath given you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you on this side Jordan, but ye shall pass before your brethren armed, all the mighty men of valor, and help them until the Lord have given your brethren rest as he hath given you, and they also have possessed the land which the Lord your God giveth them. Then ye shall return unto the land of your possession and enjoy it, which Moses the Lord's servant gave you on this side of Jordan toward the sun rising. And he always refers to Moses as the Lord's servant, saying, Moses just didn't make this decision on his own. He told you what God had said in obedience to what God told him. So you listening to Moses is the same as you obeying God, and make sure that you do that. And they answered Joshua, saying, all that thou commandest us, we will do. And whithersoever thou sendest us, we will go. According as we hearkened unto Moses in all things, so will we hearken unto thee. Only the Lord thy God be with thee, as he was with Moses. Whosoever he be that doth rebel against thy commandment, and will not hearken unto thy words and all that thou commandest him, he shall be put to death. Only be strong and of a good courage. So they were willing to obey him as they did Moses. And then in chapter 2, Joshua sends out 2 spies to spy out Jericho. I'm not going to read that part of it with you, but just know that it went well. And in chapter 3, verse 1, Joshua rose early in the morning, and they removed from Shittim and came to Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over. And it came to pass after 3 days that the officers went through the host, and they commanded the people, saying, when ye see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then ye shall remove from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it about 2,000 cubits, be about 3,000 feet, by measure. Come not near unto it, that ye may know the way by which ye must go, for ye have not passed this way heretofore. And Joshua said unto the people, sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Joshua knew this because he and God had already discussed this, and God had given him very specific information and instructions. So he knew that the Jordan River was going to dry up before him, so he could let the people know that this was going to happen. And Joshua spake unto the priests, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass over before the people. And they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. They did just what he said. And the Lord said unto Joshua, this day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. So this is God's doing. It was God's idea. Joshua did not ask God to magnify him in the sight of the people. Joshua was told by God that God would do this for him. A man of God never needs to promote himself. A man of God only needs to obey what God tells them to do, whatever it might be. It might cause him shame in the eyes of the people if they're an unbelieving group, and there's one man that believes God when everybody else doesn't. Or he might be honored, if not initially, sometime down the road. But that's not the important thing to the man of God. The man of God must be willingly obedient to God. That's the only thing that matters. Whatever follows will follow. But the man of God must be faithful so that God can rely upon him to do what he tells him to do. And God continues to talk to him in verse 8, saying, and thou shalt command the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when ye are come to the brink of the water of Jordan, ye shall stand still in Jordan. And Joshua said unto the children of Israel, come hither and hear the words of the Lord your God. That's a great statement, saying, come here. He didn't say, I'm going to tell you what I've thought of or what I think is going to happen. I'm going to tell you what God has said, okay? What I'm going to tell you are the words of the Lord, Yahweh, your God. And Joshua said, hereby ye shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Hivites and the Perizzites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Jebusites, all the people that are living in the land that they are going into. Behold, the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth passeth over before you into Jordan. You see how he magnifies God? He's the God of all the earth. He's not just the God of Israel. He's the God of all the earth. And the Ark of the Covenant is the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth. It's going to pass over before you into the Jordan River. Now, therefore, take you 12 men out of the tribes of Israel, out of every tribe a man, and it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of Jordan, that the waters of Jordan shall be cut off from the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand upon in heap. Something that water does not usually do, okay? And I don't think it was winter time here, but the waters are going to stand up upon an heap. And it came to pass, when the people removed from their tents to pass over Jordan, and the priests bearing the ark of the covenant before the people, and as they that bear the ark were come unto Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of harvest. So this is harvest time. It's not winter time. The water's not going to freeze. And it's at flood stage. The Jordan overflows its banks every year around this time. Okay? So it came to pass, verse 16, that the waters which came down from above stood and rose up upon an heap, very far from the city Adam, that is beside Zaratan, and those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. This is so cool, because God told Joshua it was going to happen before it happened, and Joshua told the people that this was going to happen before it actually happened. Okay. At the time that Joshua told the people the water's going to stand up in a heap and the waters are going to be cut off so you can pass on dry ground, it was still at flood stage when he said that. But now, what he said, which were the words of God, they came to pass. And they could see that the waters were standing up on a heap. The waters below passed down. The river dried up. And the dry land appeared, and it happened just at the time that Joshua said it was going to happen, when the priest's feet hit the water. And the priests that bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan, right in the middle of the river. And all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. So God gave his word to Joshua. Joshua gave it to the people. People listened to Joshua. Whether or not they believed it at the time that he said it, we don't know. But Joshua believed it, and it happened just the way God had told Joshua. And the people got to witness that with their own eyes, and they got to walk over this Jordan River, which had previously been at flood stage, and they walked over on dry ground. That would give them a good confidence boost in God, you would think. Chapter 4, verse 1, and it came to pass when all the people were clean passed over Jordan, they didn't get muddy, that the Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, take you 12 men out of the people, out of every tribe a man, and command ye them, saying, take you hence out of the midst of Jordan, out of the place where the priest's feet stood firm, 12 stones. And ye shall carry them over with you, and leave them in the lodging place where ye shall lodge this night. Then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had prepared of the children of Israel, out of every tribe a man. And Joshua said unto them, pass over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of Jordan, and take ye up every man of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean ye by these stones? Then ye shall answer them, that the waters of Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord, when it passed over Jordan. The waters of Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be for a memorial unto the children of Israel forever. That's great. So these were called the Stones of Witness. So generations later, when the kids would see this pile of big stones next to the river, they'd say, what's this big pile of stones? So it would have been a conspicuous pile of stones, one that would not have occurred naturally. And the dad could tell his child, or the grandfather could tell his grandchild, said, many years ago, when we entered the promised land, God caused the river to dry up right before us. These stones were in the middle of the river, along where the priests were standing with the Ark of the Covenant, and they piled them up here so that we could remember this. Very similar to the time that the Red Sea was parted for the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt. I don't think they took any souvenirs of that event, but crossing the Jordan River, they had these pile of stones as a witness to them. Verse 8 says, and the children of Israel did so as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the midst of Jordan, as the Lord spake unto Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them into the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests which bear the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they are there unto this day. So there's one pile of stones on the bank of the river that had been in the middle, and he took some other stones from off the land and put them in the middle of the river in a big pile so that they can say that was the spot where the priests were standing when the waters parted. And they're there unto this day, at least at the time that the book of Joshua was written. Verse 10, for the priests which bear the ark stood in the midst of Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to speak unto the people, according to all that Moses commanded Joshua, and the people hasted and passed over. And it came to pass, when all the people were clean passed over, that the ark of the Lord passed over, and the priests in the presence of the people. And the children of Reuben, and the children of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, passed over armed before the children of Israel, as Moses spake unto them. About 40,000 prepared for war passed over before the Lord unto battle to the plains of Jericho. Now look at verse 14. It says, on that day the Lord magnified Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him, or they had great respect to him. He was big in their eyes. Okay, Joshua was big to them, and they feared him as they feared Moses all the days of his life. They remembered that day and that time. They remembered how he was Moses' minister, but they remembered how he commanded the people, how he told them before it happened that the waters would stand up on a heap, the waters would dry up, they would pass through on dry land. They would set up the stones of witness. They heard it with their ears. They saw it with their eyes. They walked through it on their feet. And this was God's way of magnifying Joshua. Joshua didn't have to magnify himself. He didn't have to have an advertising or public relations campaign to make him look big in the eyes of the people. He didn't have to prepare clever speeches. He didn't have to strategize. And he didn't take credit for the things that happened either. He gave God credit for every bit of it. And in doing that, in obeying God, speaking for God, not shrinking back in fear or cowardice and self-preservation, because he could have said, well, what if it doesn't happen? I'll look like an idiot in front of everybody. But that didn't cross his mind, apparently, because he knew what God told him. He spoke up to all the people, which for some people is a terrifying thing to speak publicly before others. And to say something is going to happen that would be otherwise impossible, and at the time that he's saying it has not happened yet, or even an inkling that it would happen from the way things looked, but what he had was the words of God. And he took those words seriously, and he believed them. He obeyed them, and it was God that magnified Joshua in the sight of all the people. Now, this was a very different occasion than 40 years before. And I want to look at that occasion 40 years previous to this in Numbers chapter 13 and 14. We'll start in Numbers 13, verse 1. Joshua was involved in this incident. This was within a month of the children of Israel coming out of Egypt, walking through the Red Sea, and they were to go into the promised land, as God had promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the people asked Moses, can we send in some spies to spy out the land? So Moses went to God, and God said, yes, let's do this. And in chapter 13, verse 1, it says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them." And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran all those men which were heads of the children of Israel. And it names the names of the people there. You might notice in verse 6, you have of the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. And you might notice in verse 6, you have of the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun. Hoshea is Joshua, okay? If you just did a search for Joshua, you wouldn't find it here. But Hoshea, the son of Nun, and if you look up that word, Hoshea, you see it's the family name of Joshua, the son of Nun. So Joshua is there. We'll skip down to verse 16. These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Jehoshua. See that? He gave him the name Jehoshua. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwell therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they had their instructions. Notice the instructions did not include deciding whether they should go in or not, did it? It was to describe the land, what it was all about. I don't think they had a map of the land. God had told them that they would enter this land. Abraham had lived in this land, and Isaac and Jacob had, but the children of Israel, they hadn't been in that land for a number of generations. So they needed to know what it was all about, how it looked, what condition it was in. Verse 21, so they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff. That's been a big, big bunch of grapes. And they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. The place was called the brook Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told them and said, We came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it were men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so were we in their sight. Chapter 14, verse 1. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured, complained against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. What a request to make, saying, Would God that we had died in this wilderness. Remember those words, because God will. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? Now they are attributing evil intent to God, right? That God brought them there, brought them out of Egypt through the Red Sea, fed them with manna, gave them water to drink, so that they could die by the sword of these people that live in the land that he wants them to go into. That's what they attributed to God. Like, why has the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword? As if that was God's intention, that our wives and our children should be a prey. Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, Let us make a captain. And let us return into Egypt. This is what I'm talking about regarding shrinking back in fear out of self-preservation. You see that? Instead of moving forward, prospering by believing God and obeying God, they were shrinking back, and they had determined in their minds to go back to Egypt where God had brought them out. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. Which agrees with what God told them, to go into the land because God is giving it to them. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. So these two men that humbled themselves before God, okay? The rest of the people rebelled against God. They knew what God said, but they dismissed it. They put their opinion of what they thought was going to happen above what God had promised, as if God were a liar or God were evil and wanted them to be killed. When he had promised them good, when he had told them how he loved Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and how he was giving them the land that he had promised to their ancestors. For them to not believe God was an insult to God. It was disobedience, not like they didn't know what God had said, because God had repeated it to them by way of Moses. But they didn't believe, you see? They put themselves above the word of God instead of underneath it. Except those two men, Caleb and Joshua, they humbled themselves under God, and they were the ones that were bold, you see? So the humbling of yourself before God doesn't mean that you're beating yourself down and thinking you're no good. The humbling yourself before God is believing what he says instead of what everybody else says, or even what you yourself might think, okay? You believe what God says. It's a matter of humility before God to put yourself underneath what God says and to obey it, while these other ones put themselves above what God said and were rebelling against it. You see that? The ones that were afraid were the ones that set themselves above God, and they determined to go back to Egypt where God had brought them out. The two that humbled themselves before God were the ones that were brave enough, bold enough, strong enough, courageous enough to do what God said and enter into the land, fight against the people that lived there, knowing that God would help them. You see? So they weren't trying to elevate themselves, but they were willing to move forward on what God said to do. The ones that elevated themselves above God's word, they were willing to move backwards against what God said to do. Okay? And then all the congregation bade stone them with stones. What a wonderful thing to do to those that are standing up for God. But this was an unbelieving generation. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, How long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? I will smite them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee, Moses, a greater nation and mightier than they. We're going to wipe them all out and start over with you and your family. And Moses said unto the Lord, Then the Egyptians shall hear it, for thou broughtest up this people in thy might from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by daytime in a pillar of a cloud, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of thee will speak, saying, Because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, therefore hath he slain them in the wilderness. You don't want them saying that, do you? And now I beseech thee, let the power of my Lord be great according as thou hast spoken, saying, The Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation, God's own words which he had said to Moses, Pardon, I beseech thee, the iniquity of this people, according unto the greatness of thy mercy, and as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. So he interceded for them. And the Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. There's some verses in the book of Hebrews, the epistle to the Hebrews, about the day of provocation where the people provoked God in the wilderness. That's talking about this time here. There's also some verses in Psalm 95 about that, the day of provocation. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereinto he went, and his seed shall possess it. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwelt in the valley. Tomorrow turn you and get you into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, How long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. And they certainly did. We read it. Say unto them, As truly as I live, saith the Lord, as ye have spoken in mine ears, so will I do to you. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness. Remember they said, Would God that we would die in this wilderness. God heard that, and he's answering that prayer. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me, doubtless ye shall not come into the land, concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua the son of Nun. So Caleb and Joshua would enter in, but the rest of them that are 20 years and older would not. But your little ones, which ye said should be a prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness. And your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years, and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. After the number of the days in which ye search the land, even 40 days, each day for a year, shall ye bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and ye shall know my breach of promise. Meaning God's not breaching his promises, but they breached it. They breached God's promise. His promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was that his descendants would go into the land. they were making God break his promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob if they had their way and they all returned into Egypt. God said, no, I'm still going to keep my promise to them. But you individuals that murmured against me and refused to go in and rebelled and didn't believe me, you will die in the wilderness. Your children will go in. Verse 35, I, the Lord, have said, I will surely do it unto all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die. And the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land, died by the plague before the Lord, like right away. But Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. So they were demeaned by the people. The people considered them worth stoning to death. But God is the one that allowed them to live. And those two would be the two oldest men that would go into the land 40 years later. And Moses told these sayings unto all the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. And they rose up early in the morning and got them into the top of the mountain, saying, lo, we be here, and we go up into the place which the Lord hath promised, for we have sinned. So they're saying, okay, we did wrong, but now we're going to go in. And Moses said, wherefore now do ye transgress the commandment of the Lord? But it shall not prosper. Go not up. Don't go in there, for the Lord is not among you. You should have done that yesterday, okay? Today, God said, you're going to die in the wilderness, and he meant it. You're going to die in the wilderness. Go not up, for the Lord is not among you, that ye be not smitten before your enemies. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and ye shall fall by the sword, because ye are turned away from the Lord. Therefore the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up unto the hilltop, so they disobeyed that command and say, we're going anyway. We're believing God. Well, they weren't believing God, were they? They were disobeying God at this point. If they had believed God, they would have gone in when they were told to go in. But they presumed to go up into the hilltop. Nevertheless, the ark of the covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. Then the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites which dwelt in that hill, and smote them and discomfited them even unto Hormah. So, very stark difference between this incident at this time, where Caleb and Joshua, they humbled themselves under the word of God, standing up for God and encouraging the people to move forward, but were met by such resistance that all 2 or 3 million of them said, we're going to stone these two with stones and elect the captain to go back to Egypt. So they were not exalted at that time that day, but when the other 10 spies died of the plague and these two are still living, and they had the promise that they will enter the promised land 40 years later, they were exalted by God. And 40 years later, you see how God exalted Joshua specifically. He magnified Joshua in the sight of all the people. All those that were under 20 years old at the time of that incident where they rebelled against God, and the ones that were born in the wilderness during those next 40 years, they were obedient to God. They had listened to Moses, and now they're obedient to Joshua. Joshua told them what was going to happen with the water standing up on a heap, the river drying up, you'll go on dry land. They saw it happen with their own eyes after hearing what was going to happen with their ears. They walked through on their feet, and God magnified Joshua in their eyes not only that day, but it said all the days of his life the people honored him as they did Moses. So God knows how to exalt someone that is willing to humble himself before him. Okay.